800-469-7591.
A Place for Mom has helped over 200,000 families find the right senior care for their parents, from assisted living to independent living, even Alzheimer's care, and have local advisors that can help explain your options at no cost to you.
To speak with a local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 1-800-469-7591. That's 1-800-469-7591.
Call today.
Donald Trump and his campaign doing all they can to shine lights on releases from WikiLeaks that show emails that give the Clinton campaign an unfavorable light. Here's more on the story from correspondent Chris Barnes.
We're witnessing a criminal enterprise that has turned our government into a vehicle for the Clintons' personal profit at your expense.
Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump telling a rally in Green Bay, Wisconsin, newly released FBI documents are another example of how Hillary Clinton ran a corrupt State Department. He says they allege a State Department official, Patrick Kennedy, attempted a quid pro quo deal with the FBI to declassify one of Clinton's emails. He now wants Kennedy to resign. A State Department spokesman saying at that suggestion,
any really assertion that this was somehow quid pro quo, frankly, is insulting.
I'm Chris Barnes.
Two police officers in San Francisco Bay Area survived an attempted ambush. The officers were at a Starbucks when a 41-year-old man tried to shoot them with an assault weapon Sunday night. The gun jammed. USA Radio News.
Love sports articles but don't have time to search the web looking for the most compelling stories? Then U.S. Sports Pages is for you. Why spend hours going to multiple sites looking to find sports articles when we can do the work for you? Our producers go through every newspaper in the country and pick out the best sports articles separated by sport, dramatically reducing your prep time. We also include sports and entertainment kicker stories. USSportsPages.com is the only site you'll need to get your sports fix. Check us out today. The daily links at USSportsPages.com.
A group of violent California protesters stopped police from taking down a memorial to a man who pointed a vape gun at police in a shooting stance. It's hurting a local business. They've asked them to remove it. Here's more from Jason Campidonia.
Investigators say the owners of a taco stand want the makeshift memorial set up to honor Alfred Alongo taken down because it's hurting their business. Protesters showed up and wouldn't allow police to get close to the flowers, candles, and cards. At one point Monday night, police in riot gear were shoving protesters out of the area. Several reports say arrests were made. Alongo was shot and killed by police after pulling out a vaping device and took what police call a shooting stance. The shooting has been under review for 3 weeks now. Jason Campidonia, San Diego.
Las Vegas officials have announced they've received enough funding to build a new football stadium in town for the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, and also for the Oakland Raiders, who look to be moving to the city. Raiders owner Mark Davis says he hopes to bring a Super Bowl championship to Oakland before they move.
We're going to try to bring a championship back to Oakland and bring one back to the Bay Area before we make our new home here in Las Vegas.
Two people will get a very spooky Halloween treat and have the chance to spend the night in Dracula's castle. Airbnb is working with Dracula author Bram Stoker's great-grandnephew to make this nightmare a reality for two guests. The winners get a horse-drawn carriage ride through Transylvania before arriving at Dracula's castle.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Hunter and Chamber Radio and the Human Side of Business. My name is Dave White. I'm your host for the show, and each week we're going to be talking about the world of work, how it's changing, and the wide variety of people issues that emerge in the workplace. I'll also be talking with guests from a variety of different professions who will be sharing their expertise with us, as well as their stories about how they ended up where they are today. Right now, we need to go to a quick commercial break, and then I'll tell you more about today's guests. Martin Quaz, a restructuring and turnaround advisor with Brandlin Associates, and Mitchell Malzberg, a bankruptcy attorney with Mitchell J. Malzberg, LLC.
Hey, Pat, did you know between the two of us, we know how to screw in a light bulb?
Come on, Steve. We can do better than that. Well, at least I can. Tell you what, you sit there and look pretty, and I'll fix it.
Listen to you, big guy. Better yet, let's get everyone to listen to Home Sweet Home with me, Steve Bailey, Inspector with Brass Tack Home Inspections.
and I'm Pat Gregory, handyman extraordinaire with Taskman Home Improvements, every Friday at 11 a.m. Or you can go to our archives and get access to over 50 podcasts. We cover the basement to the attic and everything in between.
You can even call us at 908-237-0410 during our radio program about our home improvement projects. Remember, Home Sweet Home, every Friday at 11 on Huntington Chamber Radio.
From the basement to the attic, you're listening to Steve and Patrick. Home Sweet Home.
Okay, quick look at the weather. Right now, we're looking at very sunny skies. It's beautiful outside. And a high, well, the current temperature is 84 degrees. And we might get a little bit higher, maybe up to 85 sometime later this afternoon. But that's about it. Tomorrow, we're looking at partly cloudy skies with a high temperature of 83 degrees. Then Thursday, we're looking at the possibility of some rain. And the temperature is going to dip down significantly to a high of 68. Friday, we're back to cloudy skies. Temperature still is going to be relatively low, around 70. And then hopefully we're back to some sunny skies and, well, still a fairly cool temperature on Saturday. That's our weather for the next couple of days.
Lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. Let me repeat, lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. This is not a crazy diet or exercise program, no drugs, hormones, or shots. You can lose 20 to 45 pounds in 40 days with Nutrimost Resonant Frequency Technology to measure 2,800 of your body's key biomarkers. Using NRF, they can find and correct the cause of your weight problem by measuring factors affecting weight gain, including metabolism, fat burning, fat storage, appetite, detoxification, and hormonal regulation. It's safe, fast, easy, and effective, and you won't walk around hungry or have cravings. It's even doctor supervised. Schedule a body composition analysis and consultation. You can be transformed in 40 days guaranteed. This is a limited time offer, so they can't wait to see you look great.
So call 888-718-7077. That's 888-718-7077. Or visit njthin.com. That's njthin.com.
Welcome back to the Human Side of Business on the Hunterdon Chamber Radio. My name is Dave White. I'm your host. And my guests today are Marty Quaz and Mitchell Malzberg. Marty is a certified insolvency and restructuring advisor. And Mitchell is a bankruptcy attorney. And we're going to talk a little bit about the whole issue of bankruptcy and more particularly about companies that are finding themselves in distress. So welcome, Marty. Welcome, Mitchell. Thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you, Dave. So let me before we start, let me give a little more background. My name is Martin Quaz.
Sure.
I'm a managing director with Brandlin & Associates, which is a boutique financial advisory firm. We provide services such as forensic accounting and restructuring and turnaround services. As Dave mentioned, I'm a certified public accountant and also a certified insolvency and restructuring advisor. For more than the past 25 years, I've been helping companies with their accounting and different financial advisory services. But for the last 15, I've primarily worked with distressed companies. I've helped them turn around their operations, restructure their financial balance sheet to maximize recoveries for their lenders. I've worked with companies ranging with revenues under $3 million to revenues over $1 billion. Some of the more famous cases that you might have heard of, I've worked on the Texas Rangers Major League Baseball Chapter 11 case. If you remember Airborne, the effervescent supplement for immune support, and Stacker 2, which is a local New Jersey company. Bottom line is I work with companies to help them fix their problems and maximize recoveries for their investors and their lenders.
Oh, great. Mitchell.
Good afternoon, Dave. My name is Mitchell Malzberg. I'm an attorney, and I've been practicing law for over 23 years now. One of the main areas of practice that my practice is involved in is in bankruptcy. I have represented debtors, creditors, creditors committees, secured creditors and unsecured creditors, as well as trustees in bankruptcy throughout my career.
Okay. Is there any party you haven't represented in bankruptcy, Mitchell?
Probably equity holders I have not represented. But there are equity holders, but I probably have not represented equity holders in a bankruptcy. But I could, but I just haven't had that opportunity.
How did you find your way into bankruptcy law?
That's an interesting question. In my undergraduate, I was an accounting major, similar to Marty here, and I've always been fascinated with business. And someone introduced me to the area of bankruptcy. I started out my career there, and I really have enjoyed it because it allows me to use the law, which I've learned in law school, but as well as to use my business acumen to help me in the law get through the thing. Because part of bankruptcy is dealing with business, understanding how businesses work.
Particularly the financial end, right?
And exactly, and analyzing the financial statements of businesses and how to extricate them from their problems.
Okay, so you found a way to use both of those areas of knowledge that you've got. And Marty, you've gotten into the same kind of areas from a little different, coming at it a little differently, but okay, excellent. Well, we're going to talk today about the issue of distressed companies and bankruptcy. And Marty, there was a time a few weeks ago where I talked to you about a situation. An individual had come to me to talk about where he was a minority partner in a particular company. Obviously, I'm not going to talk about the company. And he was very, very unhappy because, in fact, as far as he was concerned, the company was going down the tubes. And he was unable to persuade the majority partner to do anything about it. Is that the kind of thing we're talking about here in terms of a company being in distress, but in this case not maybe willing to do anything about it because of how the organization is structured?
Well, I think when you talk about a company in distress, you could go off into a lot of different definitions. But in its basic definition, a company in financial distress is when it cannot meet or has difficulty paying off its financial obligations to its creditors.
Okay.
And Mitchell and I are going to get into different signs and remedies for that. But, you know, as a business owner, if your gut feeling is this isn't going in the right direction.
Right.
You know, it's time to do something. Mitchell, that was my, you know, basic definition. Would you add anything to that?
No, I would agree with that. I mean, when a business is having trouble meeting its day-to-day obligations.
Financial obligations.
Financial obligations. Your question is more towards disputes among partners or shareholders.
Right.
And that does not necessarily mean a bankruptcy situation because to be technical, in order to file a voluntary bankruptcy, you need a resolution from the corporation authorizing that bankruptcy. So if the shareholders are having a dispute and a majority at the board or the quorum
is not willing to go forward.
Right. Then you'd have to go through a state court litigation for shareholder disputes, which would be more the scenario that you're talking about.
Okay. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah, I guess we're going to talk about this later in more detail, but when we're talking about restructuring, are we talking primarily about financial restructuring or does it go beyond that?
It's financial restructuring. Sometimes in bankruptcy, you could have you're restructuring the business through management, which also involves the financial restructuring. Would you agree on that, Marty?
Yes. I mean, if you want to look at those two sides that Mitchell mentioned, you could have a pure financial restructuring, which is restructuring the balance sheet.
Okay.
But a lot of times it gets deeper into just, you know, the balance sheet. It gets into the operations, and it's looking at, you know, what are the root causes of the financial distress.
Okay.
So,
financial distress is sort of like a symptom of a larger underlying issue in terms of the company. Is that safe to say?
Typically.
Okay.
Yes, I would agree with that.
Okay. Great. All right. We're going to come back to that issue and talk a little bit more about what it means to be distressed. But right now, we need to take another quick commercial break. You're listening to the Human Side of Business on 100 and Chamber Internet Radio. My guests today are Martin Claus, a certified CPA, and also a certified insolvency and restructuring expert, and Mitchell Malzberg, a bankruptcy attorney with Mitchell J. Malzberg, LLC, located here in Hunterdon County.
Let Stowaway Self-Storage be your local moving and storage solution. With three great locations in Hunterdon County, Stowaway is conveniently located in Flemington, White House, and Lebanon. Stowaway Self-Storage offers sizes from 5x5 to 50x50, discounted packing supplies, and U-Haul rentals on site. Affordable monthly rentals for your personal and business use, let Stowaway help you park your car in the garage again or store those old records that you need to keep. Visit us at stowawayselfstorage.com and mention this ad to receive 50% off your first month's rent.
Hey, this is Big C of Good Morning Hunterdon on HuntingChamberRadio.com. Like what you hear on Hunterdon Chamber Radio? Now you can take it with you. Download our Hunterdon Chamber Radio app from iTunes and Google Play Store now. Get schedules, station information, listen live, or to the latest podcasts. Everything in the palm of your hand, or in your car during your commute. Get the HuntingChamberRadio.com app today.
This is Tony Clark, para-planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Okay, folks, we're back, and thanks for staying with us. Today we're talking with Martin Claus, who is with Brandlin Associates and is a restructuring and turnaround expert in that area, and Mitchell Malzberg, a bankruptcy attorney with Mitchell J. Malzberg, LLC. When we took our break, we were starting to talk about a little bit more about what it really meant for a company to be in distress. Marty, you want to take that up?
Yes, and as we were saying, you know, in basic form, if the company is having trouble meeting its financial obligations, I would characterize as that company is distressed. But there's, you know, maybe the bank is calling them and saying, you know what, you're not meeting, you know, the financial covenants. But that's a very basic, and we're going to get into how the company becomes in distress. Mitchell, would you add anything on the, you know, your definition of distress?
Yes, the legal definition of distress is insolvency. And there's two types of insolvency in which one would consider. One's called a balance sheet test, where your liabilities exceed your assets,
right,
and therefore you're insolvent. And Marty, as an accountant, that would be an analysis usually undertaken by an accountant to do. And the other one, which is probably more common sense to everybody, is the cash flow test, which is a company's insolvent if it's unable to pay its debts as they come due. For you know, you have payroll this week and you don't have the money for payroll,
right,
or you have significant taxes due and you don't have the money for taxes. Now,
sure,
it doesn't necessarily mean you know, and you get into what's called the zone of insolvency, which is that's also part of the test, where you know, it's when you're approaching insolvency. I mean, if you listen, you don't have the money for payroll this week because you were expecting a large receivable the following week, and you know you're going to get it. That you're in the gray area, but you're not really insolvent, because you know once you get that receivable, you're not insolvent anymore. But on the other hand, if you know there's no receivables coming, that's where you are in the zone of insolvency, and you are right there. And as corporations, you know, you have what's called fiduciary duties. And generally speaking, a fiduciary duty of all corporations, what's the best interest of equity holders to maximize profits.
Mm-hmm.
But once you become insolvent, there's case law out there that you're a fiduciary duty shifts, and you are have a fiduciary duty to for to creditors. What's in the best interest of creditors?
That's interesting.
And I'd add to that that, you know, you just can't look at financial statements and say, you know what, they're in the zone of insolvency. So we've been retained on a number of cases where we might have to rebuild some of the history and put some of the financial information that's not already disclosed in the financial statements to say, you know what, even though this happened on X date, they were in the zone of insolvency of that date. And that's where the financial advisors like myself will work with the attorneys like Mitchell to, you know, make that case, depending on which side we're representing.
The two different types of insolvency that you described, Mitchell, is one worse than the other?
Well, I mean, from a business standpoint, I would certainly think that if you have a cash flow insolvency, you're immediately going to recognize that crisis.
It's what you would hope it'd be hard to not see.
Correct. So I would think sometimes a cash flow insolvency, you know, crisis certainly would be more dramatic than the other way. But a balance sheet insolvency can become very problematic, as Marty had mentioned. If your loans are coming due and you're looking to refinance those loans,
sure,
your banks are going to be looking at those very carefully. I mean, and as Marty said, you really, from a business standpoint, a bankruptcy standpoint, you're looking at both.
Both of them.
Both tests in conjunction with one another.
Okay. Yeah, because my first reaction was that the cash flow could be just a very temporary situation versus the assets versus liabilities is maybe of a longer underlying issue, but I didn't really know if that was the case. So it's really you need to look at the two of them in conjunction.
Yes, and also the type of business. I mean, for instance, if you're a startup business, you're going to have a lot of liabilities, obviously, especially if you're a new business.
Sure.
And if you're public, you know, looking for financing to develop your business, you know, with all these dot com type companies. Whereas if you're a long established business and you're showing financial distress through the balance sheet test, that might be a different picture. So
yeah,
you really have to look at both and look at the type of business that you're in.
Now, Marty, you were telling me about a situation, because I think the natural reaction when you hear that a company went into or is in distress and is considering bankruptcy is that they did something wrong. You know, they didn't manage it properly. But you said you've been involved in situations where it was pretty much outside of the control of the organization, right?
Oh, definitely. I mean, when you look at why a company becomes distressed, it's going to be internal factors, external factors, or a combination thereof. I think the example that you're referring to, Dave, is I worked with a number of senior living facilities in the state of Illinois.
Right.
And if anybody's familiar with the state of Illinois, they have their own fiscal problems. And what they did was they stopped paying Medicaid for up to 6 months.
That's scary.
It's very scary and it's very sad. And if you're an operator of a senior living facility and let's say 60% of your revenues translated into cash flow,
sure,
are from Medicaid and you're not getting that,
yeah,
well, then how do you survive? So you could be, you know, the ideal straight-A operator.
Right.
Does everything right. But if your primary revenue source doesn't pay, that's out of your control. And what are you going to do?
Yeah, and who expects a state not to pay you? I mean, that's sort of mind-boggling, isn't it?
It is. So, okay. But there's definitely external factors that is definitely out of control of the company, and that's really going to test the company's strength,
mm-hmm,
is when it's 100% external.
Okay. So, you know, let's say I'm the owner of a company, and I see cash flow problems, but they're happening on a regular basis, more often than they should be, and I come to the conclusion my company's in distress. What should I do?
Well, first of all, you know, management should be able to tell that they're in distress. But if you determine that you're in distress, you got to take action. And I like to analogize it as, you know, I know I'm overweight. I smoke a couple packs of cigarettes a day. You know, my doctor's telling me, you know, you should probably change some of your habits.
Mm-hmm.
What do I need to do? I need to take action. I need to listen to somebody. So first of all, you have to determine, can it be fixed? And when we say can it be fixed, that means, you know what, we can take actions now to fix it. And what I like to, when I look at my restructuring engagements, I go into three phases. First is stabilize, second is rehabilitate, third is restructure. And if you think about a patient, first stabilize.
So
if this person is having an attack, let's stabilize them. Let's rehabilitate them. Okay, get on this exercise and diet schedule. And then restructure, you know, we'll make a new life for them.
How do you stabilize a company that's in distress?
Well, you have to work with all facets of the company. You have to work with their lenders.
Mm-hmm.
You have to work with their landlords, their other creditors. And depending on what you believe, if it can be fixed or not, you work with them and you have to be transparent to them to say, this is what we think we can do. We need some help from you, and this is the help we need.
Now, is this something that a business owner would normally do by him or herself, or would they turn to people like yourselves?
Well, let me take that and I'll flip it over to Mitchell. But, you know, a lot of times business owners, they've either started the business themselves or they were in the business and then went off on their own.
Right.
And they know how to operate under normal operating conditions. And they might be the best manager under normal operating conditions.
Right.
But when they cross that zone, and maybe I could say the zone insolvency, they don't know what to do.
It's a different ballgame.
It's like deer in the headlights.
Okay.
And they need to turn to advisors such as myself, such as Mitchell. Mitchell, you want to add to that?
Yeah, and I think, like Marty's saying, a lot of times you said, can the management recognize it? Yes, but sometimes the problem with management is they do recognize it, but they turned a blind eye to it, like Marty said, and they don't.
Going to denial?
It's called debtor's denial, correct.
Really?
It's a, one of the common phrases is debtor's denial. It's going to get better. And, you know, they, but like Marty said, they do not know how to help get themselves out of it. And they, but so they keep blinders on and they keep doing the same thing.
Which, of course, just makes the situation worse.
Correct. And whereas if you get an independent third party source, such as myself or Marty, to look at the situation, and the earlier you look at it, the more help you could do to somebody, because you could come up with ideas that they're not thinking about to help them out of their situation.
Well, you know, it's like denying that you've got a disease and not going to the doctor, when if you'd gone earlier, that person would have been in a better position to help you. So
I constantly say, I wish you would have come to me 6 months earlier, 9 months earlier. I mean, sometimes people take, sometimes businesses take actions that you wish they didn't take during that time period. You said, if you didn't do this and we did this, I would have been able to help you.
Could you give an example of something like that, Mitchell?
Sure. I mean, a lot of times I see with businesses, and Marty will probably attest to this, it's two things that I see quite often. A lot of times businesses, especially with taxes,
they stop paying them.
They stop paying them because no one's knocking on their door hard to pay them.
Right.
But that's one of the things that you should be paying is your taxes, because those in bankruptcy are priorities.
Right.
And for instance, there's personal liability if you don't pay your withholding taxes. So whereas you know, I would, and I'm not advocating this, but there's other avenues that you would pursue prior to not paying your taxes that I would help you out with.
Okay.
Such as maybe getting the bank, as Marty said, to forbear on making payments on loans, or to extend the term, or to recast the mortgage.
You tried that first.
Correct.
Right.
Or to create other situations. That's one situation that I see quite often. And another, oftentimes I also see from an individual standpoint is, because a lot of times when it's a smaller business or a medium-sized business, when the company faces distress, they're all, sometimes the individual principals are also faced with their own distress.
Mm-hmm.
They often tap their own 401k or individual retirement accounts to help feed that business.
Yeah, it's like to help get over the cash flow issue.
Yep. Well, that's sadly, if you're going to file a personal bankruptcy, those are one of the few assets that are protected in bankruptcy that you could always keep. So you've given now money that I could protect in a bankruptcy,
right?
And you've used it in that business, and now it's gone. And when it comes to your own personal bankruptcy, that could be could have been saved and used to help you, giving you that fresh start. So I see that quite often.
That's interesting. Okay.
And you know, it's knowing your business and knowing your products. And you know, I don't want to isolate one industry to not, but, you know, I'll say, you know, let's say you're in manufacturing, you have these different products. Let's say you're in, you know, senior living, you have multiple facilities.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't have a good pulse on your financial results and your performance, you might not know, you know, what's going on. So, and a lot of times you have pet projects. For example, let's say it was a CEO's idea to launch this type of product in this campaign.
Right.
Now you dig down into the numbers and say, we are losing
hand over fist
dollars on every, you know, unit of this product.
Yeah, who's going to go to the CEO and tell him, you know, that was a really bad idea?
Or on a senior living facility where this is just draining the cash. But if you don't know that, you can't fix it. And if you do know that, sometimes, like as Mitchell said, you know what? Sometimes they just stay where they are. It's going to get better. It's, you know what? We've been in this situation before. It's going to turn around. You know what? These advisors are too expensive. We'll fix it on our own. And you know what? It just festers and festers.
And it gets worse.
And you get in a position where if you called Mitchell or myself, you may have had a chance for a Chapter 11 reorganization, but now, and Mitchell's going to get into this more later in our conversation,
mm-hmm.
but now that you've waited, you're forced into a Chapter 7 liquidation. And that could be analogized to, you know what, you could have been healthy and, you know, continued to live into your, you know, old age. Instead, you're either disabled or you're dead.
Ooh. Okay. You know, recognizing and accepting the distress. I mean, obviously, if you're not able to pay your bills, that's a pretty obvious situation. But what are some other signs that an owner should be aware of or should be looking for that would indicate that they're moving in the wrong direction?
Okay. Well, there's a number of signs, but number one is knowing your numbers and where the trends are going. Are they increasing? Are they decreasing? If you know you have a loan facility that is nearing maturity, do you know that you're going to get that refinancing? What's going on in the market?
Right.
Are there industry conditions changing? I was on an assignment years ago, and it was a online booking for cruises.
Right.
And at the time, you know, all the major cruise lines didn't have this in-house.
Right.
Well, guess what? They started looking at this company and saying, hey, why can't we do that?
We can do it ourselves.
We can do it ourselves and save money and actually make it a revenue center. Well, what happened was all the major cruise lines started doing it in-house, and this company had to disappear. So it's understanding your life cycle, just like a product has a life cycle. It's understanding your life cycle. And one of the things that I see a lot, and I think Mitchell has seen, is where somebody tries to grow. Oh, we're doing well here. Let's grow more. Let's open up some more boxes. And you know what? The volume will come, and it's going to be great. And, you know, I think Mitchell has an interesting case that the crowd probably has heard of.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. I was involved in the Crumbs bankruptcy, which is the Crumbs Bakery Bake Shop, which was a big chain in mostly in New York, and they have some locations in New Jersey. And like Marty said, they started off with a few stores, and, you know, they kept growing and growing and growing. But two things that happened. You cannibalize yourself by growing, and you're increasing your costs by, you know, each store location and,
sure.
and whatnot. But also the cupcake craze, as they said, you know, was in its, you know, it has a life cycle. And when the life cycle slows and you've grown beyond, you know, you've expanded beyond reasonable limits, sometimes you get into the situation where you need to file bankruptcy and cut back and close stores and sell.
Did they know that it had a life cycle, or were they aware of it, or don't you know?
I mean, I can't answer that. I mean, I think no one predicts that the life cycle is going to end, and you always hope not. But as you know, there's always that big churn in business to keep growing and growing and growing.
It's like a bubble.
Correct. Growing increases revenues, and as revenues, you know, it's going to lead to profits. But that's not always the case. You know, as Marty could say, we'll say in a test, you know, stable and steady growth is probably better than, you know, opening 10 stores in a 6-month period. Maybe you only open one or two and see how that works. But, you know, there's always that pressure on business to expand and expand and expand.
I have had clients that I have had to say to them. I felt my response was, you need to slow down. And my primary reason for doing it typically, because I was often working with the owner or fairly high, is they were just spreading their management team way too thin. And mm-hmm. small things were starting to happen. They were slipping through the cracks, things that would not normally have happened. And I took that as a sign of, you know, they prided themselves on their customer relationships and the quality of the work. And you saw some signs of, because they weren't on top of things, some of that started to slip a little bit. And, what are other signs that you're growing too fast?
What do you mean saying, what other signs of growing too fast?
Yeah.
As you're growing, you're manufacturing base. You might have, you might be producing your baked goods in one location, but that was good with three stores. But now you have 15
capacity
stores
issues.
Capacity issues, and you've got to start outsourcing.
Okay.
With outsourcing comes increased costs.
Sure.
Like you said, there's all different facets or factors which, as you grow, your management team need to take into consideration, and what worked with a three location store might not work with 10, 15, 20. So you are correct. Sometimes when you grow too fast, there's other issues and inefficiencies. People often connotate the bigger you are, the more efficient you are. But sometimes, as you just said, it's the opposite. Sometimes the bigger you are, you're less efficient.
Yeah.
And you got to be careful of that.
Right. Okay. Yeah, Marty.
Another thing that you can look at is, again, my side of the conversation is, understanding the numbers and how operations impact the numbers. But when you start to expand, so when you have, store or facility number one, you're going to have revenues and you're going to have, getting down to your net income or EBITDA, and you'll say, what is our margin on that?
Right.
And then you open up, call it unit number two. And you can see what the individual statistics are, but what is it as a whole? And then let's say you grow to five or six, and you went from a $5 million top-line company to a $30 million. Well, maybe when you were a $5 million, your bottom line was a million to a million and a half to $2
million. Right.
And now that you're a 30, let's say your bottom line is at like $5 million. So then where a lot of people, well, bigger is better. Well, you know what? I think what's best for you is let's get this down to a $10 million. That's your sweet spot because you have a very individualized type of product
right.
that needs, to bring that quality to the ultimate consumer. And at $10 million, maybe you can be at $6 million. But what in my numbers that I just compared, I went from a $5 million where you're generating one and a half to two, to a $30 million where you're generating, maybe four or five. But if you bring it back down to 10, and I know your revenue is $20 million lower, but now you're at like a $6 million.
So you're looking at the ratios.
I'm looking at the ratios, and I'm just saying what makes sense. Bigger, bigger always isn't better.
Right.
That's correct.
Okay.
And that's where an outside third party such as Marty and myself could look at this business and give you recommendations. And like you said, where someone in the management team might be afraid to say that to the chief executive officer.
Yeah, no one wants to be the bearer of bad news.
Right.
So that makes sense. Okay.
And you're looking at everything. Sometimes people on the inside, what they're paid for expansion. You have to look at it's really taking a deep dive, getting intimate with everything, and where, professionals like Mitchell and myself, we're independent. We have no bias. We're going to say if something makes sense or doesn't make sense.
Right.
We don't have any favorite vendors.
No.
That we have to
no, you,
with,
get, so you don't You don't have any skin in the game, so to speak, in terms of, like you said, if someone's bonus is well, we could talk about Wells Fargo, but that would be nasty. If you set up that kind of a thing where someone's compensation is based on a goal that maybe is not the best thing in terms of the kind of behavior it generates.
like more, and one of the examples that you get with growth as is sometimes you get ineffective management, as you know, sometimes you lose controls. What I mean by controls is accounting controls, and you get sometimes theft.
Yep.
And conversion of assets that you're not aware of, and just because you've gotten so big and the controls you had in place with the smaller company is not effective with the larger company. And, you know, as a CEO, you're not aware of it, and sometimes the accountant finds this information out.
Well, yeah. And I mean, I do encounter that where someone gets in over their head, someone on the management team, where at a certain level they were fine. They could handle that. But at a higher level, they don't have the skills and the knowledge to really do that. And, you know, you can pay very dearly for that when it occurs. Right.
And you know what? When employees come in and they recognize the lack of controls, unfortunately, unless you do your due diligence up front, you're going to have employees that are going to take advantage and commit fraud. And one recommendation that I have to, which our firm also, we do forensic accounting and investigation, but one recommendation I have to all CEOs is when you're bringing in, you know, let's say a CFO or another C-level, do a background check, do a credit check. If you see you're bringing somebody in to run your payroll department and they have a very low credit score, and let's say that, you know, the credit reports say that they on average are spending $50,000 a year, and you know what, you're only offering $40,000. These numbers aren't probably market right now, but what I'm saying is they need some more money to satisfy their spending habits.
Yeah.
Where are they going to get it? So you have to be careful fraud and have the right controls in place.
Yeah. Now, you talked before about, you know, whether it could be fixed. And that kind of goes to how deep is the crisis that they find themselves in? How do you determine that?
Well, again, it depends on how early someone comes to us. And I hope from this topic today that they come early to you, because then you have time to do the down and dirty in-depth investigation that Marty talked about.
Right, the analysis.
Right, and you do the complete analysis and you evaluate whether the company has sufficient funds on hand to continue operations. You look at their internal operations and what you can fix and change, and you look to you know, what, like you said, what is their core business and what needs to be fixed or repaired, or can it be fixed and repaired?
Right.
You know, as you've seen with the technological advances today, I mean, if you're coming, you know, one of the bigger bank insolvency and liquidations that you found in I'd say in the 90s, early 2000s were print shops, because – you know, with technology today.
Yeah, talk about a disruptive change.
Correct.
I mean, you know, the digital world kind of blew them out of the water.
So, you know, if you're going to evaluate that industry, well, you know, it's to reorganize might be difficult. Whereas, you know, similarly with the newspaper industry or the record industry, due to the technological advances, or the book industry, you know, you really got to know your industry.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if, as Marty said, another example, if you're in a manufacturing and you have, you know, three core businesses, and two of them are your money makers, and your third is your money, is your cash flow
crossing in, right?
That's where a bankruptcy can help and reorganize. Would you agree, Marty?
I would agree. And you know, one of the unfortunate things are when people are starting their businesses, they prepare a detailed business plan,
right?
And as they grow and they're making money and they get comfortable, they don't take that approach to the business plan the same as they did
when
they were starting out.
That's interesting.
And just using Mitchell's example, well, if you are doing this and you're saying, okay, we need to invest in, let's say Unit C was the one that's not making money, we need to invest in this, we need to invest in this, and somebody stops and says, wait a minute, why do we – this is a loser here.
It's a losing proposition, right?
Or why are we going to invest all this? Because, you know, if you look at these metrics, every dollar that we put into Unit A,
it's costing
we're getting
us
back $5. Every dollar we're putting into Unit C, we're losing money.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's where you have to look at it, and you just have to be – you have to approach your business – as a doctor approaches a patient, and monitor the vital signs, and don't lose sight that if you want to be in for the long run, you have to follow, you know, these rules.
Yeah, I can see that being very difficult, particularly if it's someone who has started their own business, because that's their legacy. It's almost like that's like their child, and I can see them fighting that. I really can. Yes. I'm sure you've encountered that.
That is very true, and that's why sometimes an outside, independent person looking in can give them the light or that they don't see. But I would agree with Marty. One of the biggest common things that I see all the time is the lack of record or you know, updated financial records of, you know, keeping, you know, to focus on your core, you know, do you do balance sheets? Do you do projections and show them into each business,
okay,
line of business?
We need to take another real quick commercial break, but then we're going to come back and then finish up our conversations with Marty Cause and Mitchell Malzberg.
Home Instead Senior Care. It's our passionate dedication to creating personal relationships between our clients and our caregivers. Visit our website at www.homeinstead.com/325. You've got a friend.
For over 50 years, Hunterdon Medical Center has been a leader in delivering comprehensive medical and health services to our community. Our staff is committed to providing the highest quality of care to our patients. If you need a physician, we can refer you to over 300 of the best. Call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Welcome back, everyone. We're talking with Martin Cause and Mitchell Malzberg, and we're addressing the issue of bankruptcy. And one of the things you said to me earlier was, you know, that a company is in distress, the management team comes into play with regard to what they can do about it, and whether or not they even recognize that they're in distress. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Sure. Well, number one, I think we were discussing, you know, should they be able to recognize it? And, you know, I mentioned that a lot of times operators are used to operating under normal operating conditions, not under distress. And when they hit that distress situation, they're like deer in a headlight. And that could be because, you know what, they want to pay all their vendors because they've known them for years, or they might be personal friends.
Right.
But, you know, really when you get into the distress situation, it's a different animal, and you have to be able to, me as the financial advisor, I have to be able to evaluate management and say, you know, who can, you know, direct the ship here.
Okay.
And one of the hardest things I have to do sometimes is actually convince the owner or the president that they're the ones that
they need to step aside.
Step aside.
Ooh.
And, you know, like our firm, we can come in and we can take an interim management position, whether it's interim CFO or interim CEO. But it's really important to evaluate that management and say, are they open to change? Do they have the ability to work in a crisis mode? And even if they do have that ability, do they have credibility with their lenders or their vendors? Because if they don't, you need somebody else that will work with those outside parties.
Yes, I would agree. I mean, sometimes your lenders are going to be dictating that. Like Marty said, sometimes as a condition of the continuing operations in a bankruptcy or outside of a bankruptcy, they want management replaced.
Okay.
Because they've lost credit.
They've lost trust in them.
But you know, hopefully you've come to us early enough, and they haven't lost trust with you, and if they are able to manage the crisis, that they could stay in control if that's what's appropriate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How about these companies? Obviously, if you're talking to replacing the CEO or the owner, that they are headed for bankruptcy. And to my mind, bankruptcy always has a very negative connotation to it. Is that really true?
I mean, in some cases, for the people who aren't sophisticated in business, it might be that connotation is true out there. Oh, I don't want to file bankruptcy. It's bad for my reputation.
Yeah.
As you see more and more today in business, while it's not the most optimum thing you want to do, and I think, Marty, correct me if I'm wrong, but our first choice is not to file bankruptcy or go to bankruptcy. But if that is the option that is taken, most businesses today, or lenders, or your creditor constituencies, they faced it before, and it can happen, and it's a strategic move. I mean, you're doing it for a multitude of reasons, to give you that breathing space, to give you that time to be able to reorganize if you're going to reorganize, or to be able to orderly liquidate for the benefit of creditors. So, yes, it can have a negative connotation, but in today's world, I mean, listen, you've seen, as we all know in today's world, General Motors has filed bankruptcy and has successfully reorganized.
Right.
Almost every airline in America has filed bankruptcy. It can be a tool to be used to help a business reorganize and to get off that fresh start and be able to save jobs and continue operations.
Yeah, you said something interesting earlier, Mitchell, about the purpose of bankruptcy being to preserve value. Mm-hmm. Can you explain that a little bit more?
Sure. I'll give a simple example is, if you're, and this is from an individual standpoint, if your home, if you haven't paid your mortgage and it's in foreclosure, but the mortgage that's due is $100,000, but the house is worth $300,000, but you've turned a blind eye to that distressed situation and you've waited to, you've ignored the foreclosure. You've ignored, the sheriff's sale's coming.
Right.
Well, I mean, you're not going to maximize the value for your creditors. I mean, you could not only owe money to your lender, which is $100,000. You could have large credit card debts and other debts.
Sure.
So, a bankruptcy in that case, whether it be a Chapter 7 or a Chapter 13, I mean, would allow the trustee, if it's a Chapter 7, or you in a Chapter 13, if you still can't afford it, to sell your house in an orderly fashion, meaning you'll give yourself that time to market it and sell it for a maximized price. Whereas
right.
at a foreclosure sale, you know, it's going to be a gavel sale, an auction sale, where you might only get $120,000, where the true market value of that house, let's say it's $250,000. Well, that's that $120,000 to $250,000 is the maximized value. Who did you benefit? You benefited your creditors and yourself.
I was going to say, it could be in the self-interest of the creditors because they'll get more for in terms of the liabilities than they might otherwise get if it goes right down to the wire. Right.
Now, that example I gave for an individual, but that's the same situation for a commercial situation. I mean, a lot of times the bank who's the secured creditor, it's their collateral, which is
in play.
in play here. You're going to try to maximize value, whether you sell it as a going concern. You're going to try to maximize that value for that secured creditor in a bankruptcy. You're going to have a public auction sale or an orderly liquidation where you've seen, Sports Authority is an example recently where they filed a Chapter 11 to liquidate an orderly liquidate and have the going out of business sales.
Well, right.
that was the purpose of that is to design to maximize value for the creditors. They sell leases, and you look at me maybe strange. What do you mean by a lease? Well, if the lease, the fair market value of that leasehold premises, you entered into that lease 20 years ago and it's $10 per square foot, and today it's worth $50 a square foot. Well, you could sell that lease in a bankruptcy to maybe it's Dick's Sporting sporting goods, they're going to buy it, and you've brought value into the asset of the business for the benefit of creditors.
And that's where you need these professionals to come into play, because somebody might say to you, because of their experience, oh, you need to liquidate. You should file for Chapter 7. Well, if you file for Chapter 7, you know, a trustee comes in, you hand over the keys, and they run it, and they're actually paid on, you know, the proceeds that they get in that liquidation. Where somebody else might say, well, you know what, if you file for Chapter 11 and a Chapter 11 liquidation, you have control, you understand the business, you understand all the facets, where still it's a liquidation, but you can maximize value for your creditors. And which probably slim chance if there's anything left over for equity. But that's where, you know, professionals really come into play to tell you, is it better to file for Chapter 11 reorganization, Chapter 11 liquidation, Chapter 7? And that's really Mitchell's specialty, to help leverage the laws and say, and he'll work with people like me, but help leverage the laws and say, this is what's best for you.
Okay, so there are two different kinds of liquidation, one under Chapter 11 and another kind under Chapter 7? And
yeah.
What, you have more you retain more control if it's Chapter 11 liquidation?
That is correct. You can maintain more control in a Chapter 11, because in a Chapter 11, the debtor is in possession of the assets and they control the case, especially early on, the outset of the case, assuming that a Chapter 11 trustee hasn't appointed, and we're not going to get into that today. But, yes, you control it, whereas in a Chapter 7, you're basically, as Marty said, turning over the keys, and a trustee gets appointed, and it's not someone you know,
right.
And they decide what to do with the assets.
Okay.
So whereas in a Chapter 11, like in this Sports Authority example, is they decided to orderly wind down and liquidate through their management, through their professional team, and they orderly wound down. Whereas mm-hmm. if they filed a Chapter 7, what would have happened there is a trustee would have been appointed, and he would have determined how to liquidate.
Okay.
And of course, Dave, we're coming at it from a very macro view. There's a
yeah,
lot,
I know,
of,
but still.
Lot of detail behind it, right. But we're trying to give the big picture
there's
to the audience.
Right. No, understood.
As Marty said, there's state court proceedings which are available to companies in distress. It's called an assignment for benefit of creditors,
mm-hmm.
which are often used. Sometimes it's a receivership we've seen happen by lenders, which in essence is a form of liquidation. Like you said, there's a Chapter 11 reorganization or a Chapter 7. They're both the same, Chapter 11, but it determines what you do.
Okay.
A liquidation or a reorganization.
All right. We're coming down to the wire because we're just about out of time here. But I do want to give each of you a chance to tell our audience, if anyone is interested in more information or wants to contact either of you, what's the best way to do that?
Well, if anybody wants to contact me, feel free to give me a call. My number is 973-879-4667, or my email address is Martin, MARTIN, at Brandlin, BRANDLIN, .com. But what I just want to say is if you have a situation, don't be embarrassed. Take action.
Yeah,
make the call.
Wait.
Get some free advice, and I'll hand it over to Mitchell.
Okay, Mitchell?
Yes, similarly, my name is Mitchell Malsberg, and my phone number and my office is in Clinton is 908-323-2958, and my email address is mmalsberg, MMALZBERG, at mjmalsberglaw.com. And like Marty said, yes, the earlier you contact either Marty or myself is the better.
Okay, great. Gentlemen, thank you very, very much. Maybe we'll get you back. I think we just hit the tip of the iceberg here. But everyone, thank you for joining us today on the Human Side of Business at the Hunterdon Chamber Internet Radio.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Jason Wirt.
This operation will take some time, in part because Mosul is such a large city, but also in part because ISIL has spent the last 2 years digging in to defend that city.
White House spokesman Josh Earnest commenting on the operation to try to take Mosul back from Islamic terrorist group ISIS. Peter Cook at the Pentagon told reporters that American troops, while in support operations, aren't anywhere near the fighting.
Most of the American forces in Iraq are not anywhere close to the front line.
The investigation continuing into the firebombing of a Republican headquarters in Orange County, North Carolina. Here's North Carolina Governor Pat McCrory.
Disrespect is not politics, but violence takes it to a whole nother level.
A new video being released from filmmaker James O'Keefe showing Democratic operatives caused disruptions and caused violence at Trump protests this summer. More news at USAradio.com.
Hi, I'm Joan London. When I needed to find senior care for my mom, I really struggled to find the right fit until I found an advisor, someone who had been through this before. That's why I recommend A Place for Mom, the nation's largest senior living referral service. They have experts who will